Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes see details.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Procrastination. Putting it off. Kicking the can down the road. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Carpet in the bathroom. Like why? In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Oh my God, it's the coolest thing ever. Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? Well, check this out. It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic famous foods from restaurants across the country anywhere nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. They ship Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. Seriously. So if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT.
And welcome, everybody, to today's exciting episode.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Interrupting Tom DeLonge.
Interrupting.
Where are you? It's terrible.
That one just belongs to Polar Bear, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He put you up to that one, didn't he?
He might have requested it.
Okay, fair enough. Right, we're just going to move straight on from that. Yeah. Although I do approve of interrupting Tom DeLonge.
Yeah. You wait till next week.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, might as well dive into straight away. What are we covering this week then, Josh?
This week we have a juicy one. It's been requested. Shout out to my friend Alex, who reminded me that I said on a previous podcast that I would cover this. So
this one, I think, was actually requested by a few people, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, and they kept saying, when are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? So I thought, you know what? It's time to go in.
So we're moving on. So if you have not listened to the 27 Club, our episode on the 27 Club, rewind, go back, listen to that one, and then come and listen to this one.
Yep.
Because it's important.
We are covering the man, the rock legend, Kurt Cobain.
All right.
And the conspiracy behind his
suicide.
There's
a conspiracy?
There is. There is a well-known conspiracy about his suicide. I'll come back to that, though.
His suicide. Yeah. Little quotation marks here. Okay.
Yes. So later on, when we come to the conspiracy part, I will have a little statement because I think for the listeners, we don't want to keep saying allegedly all the time because it gets annoying.
It does.
Yeah. So I'm just going to make a little statement, but we'll do that when we come to the conspiracy.
Okay.
First, we've got to dive into the history. And for once, I think the history is not boring. I just think it's pretty cool. I learned a lot about Kurt.
It ought to be. Kurt had a very colourful life. So, yeah, let's dive into the man, the myth, the legend, Kurt Cobain.
Kurt Donald Cobain was born February 20th, 1967, in Aberdeen, Washington. He formed Nirvana with Chris Novoselic in 1987, and they released their debut album, Bleach, in 1989.
What an album.
What an album, yeah. He's part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yes, rightly so.
I think he was inducted in 2014. And he was also...
Really? That late?
Yeah.
Crikey. Okay.
And he was... Well, Rolling Stone had him in one of the top 100 greatest songwriters of all time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So he's got a few accolades.
Yeah.
But that's just a brief statement on people that don't know who Kurt Cobain is. I will go into his first band and things like that now. So let's start from the beginning.
Why not?
His mother, Wendy, was a waitress, and his father, Donald, so his middle name is after his father, was a mechanic.
Right, nice.
The name Cobain is actually Irish. Comes from Irish ancestors.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough.
He comes from a musical family. His uncle was in a band called the Beachcombers, and his aunt also played guitar in a band as well. And Kurt was described as a happy child, and his talent came at a young age when his grandmother, Iris, found drawings and art in his bedroom.
Fair enough.
And he, apparently he could draw a really good Daffy Duck and Donald Duck.
Oh, right, okay.
He was very good at drawing ducks.
Yeah, he's very creative.
Cobain developed an interest in music at a young age and started singing at the age of 2. And at the age of 4, he started to learn to play piano.
He started singing at 2?
Yeah.
Was that da, 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 da?
Well, apparently he was very well developed. So at the age of 2, singing piano by 4. So fair play to him. His favourite artists included Electric Light Orchestra and the Beatles. They were his top two.
Oh, my grief.
But as he got older, he found great interest in Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, Black Sabbath, Queen, Kiss, and Jimi Hendrix.
Definitely.
Yeah. So they were his main influences as he got older. And it also had a little switch. I'll get back to that bit later on. But he actually started getting into more like alternative weird music, like the Pixies.
Oh, really?
Like that. Yeah, he really loved the Pixies, which
I
never
Pixies,
knew.
I like Pixies, yeah. Very, weird band, but...
Yeah, yeah. And I think that kind of fits. I only know about 2 or 3 songs.
Yeah, I've never really heard you mention the Pixies. Oh, let me guess, you know, Where Is My Mind?
Yeah.
Debaser.
Yeah.
I bet that's it, isn't it?
Pretty much. Yeah. There's a third one that if I heard it, I would recognise it.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's the Pixies. I can't think of the name, honestly. But I don't mind the Pixies. I just think of the movie Fight Club because it's...
Yeah, right at the end, yeah.
So when Cobain was 9 years old, his parents divorced. He said later that this deeply affected him and his life. His mother said his personality changed dramatically and he became very defiant and withdrawn.
Well, a lot of people do in their teenage years, don't they?
Yeah. And in a 1993 interview, Kurt said he felt ashamed of his parents and desperately wanted a typical normal family. So,
Was abnormal? His dad was a mechanic. I mean, it's fairly normal.
I think it was the fact that they got divorced and...
Oh, right, yeah, I suppose that wasn't such a big deal. It was, well, it wasn't so common back then,
well,
I suppose. Was it particularly in America with religion being, like, very...
It goes into this as well, this next bit, I think, added to the fact that he didn't have, like, a normal family.
Okay.
So his dad remarried and had a whole new family, which he had... stepbrothers and things like that.
Okay,
so I think Kurt felt a little bit pushed to the side, like he was old goods kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then his mum dated a man who was very abusive and he even witnessed him break his mother's arm and sent her to hospital. But she stayed committed to the relationship. So both homes are broken homes for him, if you know what I mean. So that messed with him from an early age.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, seeing your mum... getting beaten up and then, like, because he would have been, like, in his teen years, he'd probably trying to encourage her to leave him,
mm-hmm.
get away from it. And the mum, obviously insecure, didn't want to do that, didn't want to be probably financially insecure as well as emotionally insecure. So, yeah.
And that does actually still happen now, doesn't it?
Oh, like, yeah.
A lot of people stay with abusers and things, and it's a real shame. So he then moved into a friend's house called Jesse Reed. And they were devout Christians.
Right.
So Kurt attended church with them regularly on Sundays. And religion remained an important part of his personal life and his beliefs, like, going forward into his adulthood. But...
Well, a lot of America, particularly back in, like, the 80s, 90s, were very religious.
Yeah, very.
You know, very, very religious.
But fun fact here, the Jesse Reed family weren't very happy with him because when... Kurt was writing lyrics and listening to music, they thought it was very anti-religion and anti-Christian.
He's listening to rock music, play it backwards, you'll hear the devil worship and all this sort of thing. Yeah, so, what a load of tosh.
They weren't very impressed with him. So he hated sports and would quite often lose wrestling and baseball games on purpose in an attempt to upset his father.
Fair enough.
So yeah. Wrestling games, the bell would ring and he would literally just lay down and get pinned.
And just ding the bell.
And I just imagine the whole time he's just looking at his dad like, is this what you want? And then same with baseball. So
I want you to be a man.
Same with baseball, three strikes and you're out. He just used to get struck out all the time on purpose. Yeah. And he just wasn't up for it. Didn't like sports, didn't like competition and things, just wasn't into it.
Fair enough. He wasn't a competitive guy, fair enough.
And Kurt actually hated people.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You would never guess that from his music.
Yeah, he was quite a lone wolf, is the way I'd describe him. But he actually befriended a gay student because he hated people so much that when people at school thought he was gay, they would leave him alone.
And he wanted that?
Yeah.
Okay. So the people were all like, oh, stay away from him, he's gay. So yeah. Kurt just thought, oh, I'm going to hang out with him because nobody else wants to.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So he was quite comfortable with people thinking he was gay, just so he'd get left alone.
Yeah.
And he was also then arrested as a teenager for spray painting God is gay on pickup trucks. So he fully was committed to being left alone.
He really was, yeah.
Obviously, all that teenage angst and rebellion and stuff was through him.
He's just doing it to annoy Jesse's
family.
Probably,
yeah. So his
was it their pickup truck that he?
No, it's just people around the town, just around anyone, the city. So his uncle actually gave him the choice. I think it was 16th birthday, I want to say, but he had the choice of an old beat up secondhand guitar or a motorbike.
Right.
And he picked the second-hand guitar.
Really? Yeah.
And I read it was because he said to his uncle that he can't make money off a bike, but at least he can busk and try and earn some money off a guitar.
Well, he could deliver pizzas on a bike.
He could.
Probably earn more money than busking.
Oh, you never know. But he was a child prodigy
at two. An electric guitar if he didn't have an amplifier. How are you going to busk without an amplifier? You know?
I have no idea.
I don't think he thought this through very well.
But we're forgetting he was a prodigy at the age of two. He was singing at two, playing piano by four.
That's true. And in fairness, like, look where he actually got to.
Yeah.
So he probably picked the right choice anyway, didn't he?
Yeah, that's the thing. This is his history, and these are the things he'd done that led to...
And then we go, no, he did it wrong. Ended up multimillionaire because he didn't do it wrong.
Yeah, so it's a good thing he picked the second-hand guitar. Bonus question, though, for you. 10 points.
Mm.
Can you name his favourite guitar and what he used most when he was in Nirvana?
I want to say a Fender Telecaster.
Not a Tele. It was a Fender. Specifically, a Japanese-made Fender, because he liked...
It wasn't a Strat. He never used to use
a
Strat. I'm sure it wasn't.
It was pretty... He pretty much... He didn't invent it, but, like, he owned it, and it's kind of considered his guitar.
Go on, you're going to have to tell me.
Do you remember a Fender Mustang?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, fair play, yeah.
So in some music videos, he played a Jaguar.
Right.
Because it was a bit bulkier and looked a bit...
In videos, you play whatever makes it... Because you're not even plugged in when you're doing a video anyway, are you? I mean, look at all these bands that, like, they do, like, shot after shot, and they're playing a different instrument, like, a different guitar every little shot, you know? I've seen interviews with the Red Hot Chili Peppers where Flea was literally just complaining about his bass guitar, just going, no, I hate it. It's got horrible nuts. It's got horrible neck. It's got horrible bridges. It's got horrible pickups. It's just terrible guitar. I would never play this on stage, you know?
Yeah.
But for the video, just could do it, didn't you?
Yeah, and he preferred the Japanese Fenders because he said that the necks were thinner. I didn't know
possibly.
So,
right, okay,
Fender Mustang was his favourite. Look up a picture of it. It's pretty cool looking.
Because the Japanese Fenders are pretty much Squires, aren't they?
A Squire is a low-budget Fender, isn't it?
Yeah, made in either Japan or China. If you want, like, a high-quality Fender, it's normally made in America, in the US.
And then you get some in Japan and some in Mexico, which are,
that's
like,
right.
the cheaper version ones. So he became friends with Roger Osborne, who was the singer and guitarist for a band called the Melvins, who introduced him to punk rock and hardcore music and rock and all of that stuff, Sex Pistols and whatnot.
Yeah.
So he then dropped out
good
of school.
Stuff.
Yeah, all the good stuff. So he then dropped out of school and crashed with friends, and he even lived under a bridge at one point, which inspired the song Something in the Way, which some people would know from the Robert Pattinson version of Batman. That's like the theme tune.
Right, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
In case you were wondering what song that was, that is the one.
Look it up if you don't know it.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good song. It's kind of depressing and sad, but it's...
Like most Nirvana songs.
Yeah, but I quite like it. It's kind of catchy. Yeah. This is where we start getting into Kurt's like kind of personality and things. So
yeah.
He met his first love was a woman called Toby Vale, and she was of the girl band Bikini Kill.
Oh, don't recognise that band. But
and he is said to have written several songs about her. And he even threw up instantly when he met her because he was overwhelmed with anxiety.
Really?
Because of how, like, infatuated he was with her and thought she was the best and how pretty she was and everything.
Was she just another local Seattle band then, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they met through music, and her band apparently was doing the tours and things. And
they were quite a well-known band then, yeah?
Running in the same circles.
Fair enough, yeah.
But from my research and reports... I think Kurt actually wanted something a bit more serious with her, and she actually had a bit more of a rock and roll lifestyle. I was like, no, I'm not into misogyny and things like that.
Yeah,
and
just wanted to be a bit of a player. And,
yeah. So they eventually split up, but Toby Vale was the main inspiration for a lot of his songs.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So Kurt actually, people might know this. If not, he actually played guitar left-handed. He was left-handed.
Yeah.
But oddly enough,
like a lot of the greats,
he was supposedly ambidextrous, so he would write with his right hand.
Oh, okay.
So he could, but he just preferred to play guitar left-handed. So he was left-handed, he could use his right, you know, if he wanted to. His first band was called Fecal Matter. They didn't get very far.
I wouldn't imagine they did. No.
He first met Chris Novoselic through other bands and friends in the area and quickly formed Nirvana.
So his first band was called Fecal Matter, and his second band was named after the feeling you get when you pass Fecal Matter.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Yeah, especially if it's a big one. Cool. Nothing like that.
Oh, Nirvana.
Yeah. And... So it was pretty much him and Chris that formed Nirvana. Yeah. They went through a fair few drummers. And the muse that was behind a lot of their songs and songwriting was religion. But Kurt developed an interest in Buddhism and the philosophy of Buddhism.
Oh, really?
So he started not being so much of a wild teenager and actually started becoming a bit more calm and relaxed. And he really... not idolized, but he appreciated the philosophy of Buddhism and the religion.
So his band is Zen.
Yeah, yeah. So he wasn't Buddhist. He doesn't say that he's Buddhist. He just liked the philosophy.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
So
I think we can all agree with that one, to be honest. Whether you actually follow the Buddhism religion or not, I think most people agree it's quite a down to earth, you know, religion. It's got some good ideals. And like basically, there's nothing forcing you to follow any part of Buddhism. It's like Buddha was this guy years and years ago who just went around and said, "I've got these ideas," and everyone went, "They're good ideas. I'm gonna follow that guy."
Yeah,
and that's pretty much how it started. So.
Yeah, good on shout out to Buddha. good on him.
Like he needs a shout out. Yeah.
During their first few years of playing together, Chris and Kurt had several drummers, but eventually settled on a guy called Chad Channing. And they recorded their debut album, Bleach, with him. But Kurt didn't actually like his style. He didn't like his style of drumming. He said it didn't fit the more rocky direction
Kurt
things.
Kurt was always complaining about drummers.
He was. So Chad was fired.
Fair enough.
And then he was replaced by none other than the rock legend Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
Kurt also used to complain about it.
Yeah, but he was the drummer for their album Nevermind,
yeah,
which was the album that
really
made it
launched
big.
Them. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Smells Like Teen Spirit was the song that I think, I can't remember quite right, I think Dave changed some drum parts and came in with the drum beat and stuff, and that was when they were like, yeah, that's the guy. That's the one we want.
Iconic intro, that is.
So they quickly entered the mainstream, and Dave Grohl was their permanent drummer.
Yeah.
Nirvana actually created and pioneered a subgenre of rock called grunge. They were pretty much the ones that created it.
Hell yeah.
Since their debut, Nirvana has sold over 28 million albums just in America and 75 million worldwide.
Wow.
And obviously with streaming and things nowadays, it's a bit different, but CDs and things, yeah. That's really impressive to be able to sell 75 million CDs worldwide.
Yes.
So Nirvana's success led the way for other Seattle rock bands such as Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam, and Soundgarden.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if it wasn't for Nirvana, those bands wouldn't be as successful or be around.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt was also dubbed the voice of a generation and a rock icon from a young age.
Rightly so.
But he didn't like that. He didn't like the fame. He didn't like what the music industry was doing. And he was actually a vocal opponent for sexism, racism, sexual assault, and homophobia. And because of this, on several occasions at shows and things, he would actually receive death threats because he was just so open to everyone being... You know, I don't know whether it goes back to the Buddha philosophy, but he just wanted people to be happy and to live their lives and be kind to one another.
It was kind of the message of grunge, really, wasn't it? It was just like, be what you want to be. Do you. That was kind of their whole thing, wasn't it? You know, it was just like, F the system, do what you want.
Yeah.
Make yourself happy, because life ain't going to hand you anything but lemons.
But he used to actually do free gigs and things for like gay rights and stuff.
Yeah,
and
He
just didn't care. He just wanted to be like put his music in him to good use and not be sheltered by the music companies and things like that. So later on, I mentioned some of his musical tastes, but he also ended up getting into Black Flag is Henry Rollins, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Because they've... Oh, yes, no. Black Flag is the one with the four lines as their logo. It's Henry Rollins. They were very, like, punk rock in your face. Yeah, yeah. So Black Flag, Iggy Pop, The Pixies, R.E.M. and Sonic Youth is eventually what he kind of started getting into.
Fair enough. I was never really massively into R.E.M., to be honest.
No, but Michael Stipe... I'm glad you said that, because Michael Stipe, the lead singer of R.E.M., is actually the godfather to Kurt Cobain's daughter, Frances Bean Cobain.
Oh.
So they were really good friends. And the same with the lead singer...
Frances Bean Cobain.
Yeah, Frances Bean. And fun fact, the reason her middle name is Bean is because when they had the sonograms?
When they scan. Yeah.
Kurt would giggle and say that she looked like a kidney bean.
Well, babies do.
Yeah, so he liked the name Frances Bean.
Fair enough.
And he's not only good friends with the lead singer of R.E.M., Michael Stipe, he was good friends with the lead singer of Sonic Youth, Kim Gordon.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, we're starting to get to the dangerous bit.
Okay. The juicy part.
We can't mention or go into the conspiracy part without giving you a little bit of background on... his partner, his ex-wife.
Yes, who she was and what she was all about, I suppose.
Yeah. So I'm just going to spend a couple minutes on her. So Courtney Love was the singer and guitarist of a grunge band called Hole.
Mm-hmm. All girl, I think, wasn't it?
All girl band, yeah. I also think the bass player, or a couple of them, had problems with drugs as well, and they were very much the same as I always felt like they were trying to be the girl version of Nirvana.
Courtney Love was very, very influenced by Nirvana.
But online, it's actually unsure of how they actually officially met. Some say they just met at a random nightclub with friends of friends, but the one that is most likely is they met at a Butthole Surfers gig. And that is a band called the Butthole Surfers.
Fair enough. I heard that Courtney really got into Nirvana, like, as a band to start with. It was her favourite band. Wherever they gigged around Seattle, she would go to every single gig. She tried multiple times to get backstage without a pass and that sort of thing, just flirting with the bouncers or whatever like that, because she wanted to get close to the band, get to meet the band and that sort of thing. And then eventually she did... And she sort of tried to whittle her way into Kurt's heart and pants. And I don't think he wanted to start with.
He wanted a bachelor life for a few months.
Rejected her at the start, didn't he? But she was quite persistent. That's the story I've heard, anyway. I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty much what I saw in the research. Yeah, she was very into him, and he wasn't to start with. But then after, I suppose, grinding him down, eventually he was like, okay. That's just what I read.
Well, eventually, I suppose, they had such similar lifestyles. Mm-hmm. Both, you know, being leader of bands and the same kind of music, the same kind of scene. They'd have been invited to the same parties and whatnot. Yeah. So, you know, it was just going to happen, wasn't it?
Love of music, drugs,
yeah,
into the same stuff. The two of them were married on a beach in Hawaii in 1992. And this just shows you what kind of person Kurt is. He didn't wear a tuxedo. He turned up in his green pajamas because he couldn't be bothered to wear a tux because it was too much effort. And there was only...
That doesn't surprise me.
There was only 8 people at their wedding.
Oh, was there?
Dave Grohl being one of them.
Oh, fair play.
So their daughter was born on August 18th, 1992. And Courtney Love actually admitted back in the day in an interview to drug use in the early stages of her pregnancy.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. So that's just a little thing on Courtney Love. There's not really much to say. She was Kurt's wife. She was in a band. She was into drugs. She was
famous in her own right, to be fair. A Hole were quite a big band in the 90s.
Were they? I can think of one song.
It might be just because of her attachment to Kurt, and that's what actually, you know, brought them into the limelight. But they were a well-known band.
I would bet money on the fact that there's not a single karaoke machine with a single Hole song on it, I would say.
I'm not taking that bet. It wouldn't surprise me, to be honest.
Either way,
bet there's at least Nevermind in every jukebox.
I mean, terrible music either way. So let's move on. Let's move on. Like, I don't really have anything nice to say about her or her band. So
no? Okay.
Let's move on from her. I'm trying to stay mutual and just be a reporter.
Let's put
Hole
in a Hole.
Yeah, let's put her in a Hole. So most of his life, Kurt had an undiagnosed stomach condition, which led to a lot of drug use, heroin. But he even started drug use at an early age. At the age of 13, he was already an avid cannabis user.
Who wasn't?
He, sorry. Yeah. He used a lot of drugs, including acid, LSD, and pills as well. But eventually it was heroin that sent him off the rails.
Yeah, because of his, you said it was undiagnosed, but I'm pretty sure it was a stomach ulcer he had, wasn't it?
I think so, but we haven't even touched the conspiracy theory part, so I'm not going to go into speculation.
I think from what I remember, I'm sure it was down to a stomach ulcer, and that the heroin was the thing that he found that got rid of the pain more than the medication that any doctors was prescribing him.
Possibly.
So he just kind of self-medicated.
But then I also read in my research that one of his good friends said that he got stomach problems through taking heroin.
Probably was.
You never know.
Yeah,
what
drink,
it is,
drugs, alcohol, everything.
He did have some sort of stomach condition, and heroin did seem to be the temporary cure for a few days at a time. So on July 23rd, 1993, Cobain suffered an overdose, and rather than call the ambulance, Love injected Cobain with naloxone, which reverses the effects of an opioid.
Right.
Kurt then proceeded to play a show with Nirvana, giving the public no indication anything had happened. So that's pretty rock and roll.
Yeah.
And then March 1st, on tour in Rome, after receiving medical attention for bronchitis and severe laryngitis, Love one morning awoke to find Cobain had overdosed again on a combination of champagne and Rohypnol. And Rohypnol is supposedly used for insomnia, to help with insomnia.
It's a date rape drug.
Yeah, but it's also used for...
Whatever.
So he was rushed to hospital and was well again after 5 days of being in hospital. Love later claimed that this was Kurt's first suicide attempt. She's the only one claiming that.
We'll never know, will we, I suppose.
So March 18th, 1994, Love called Seattle police, informing them that Cobain was suicidal and had locked himself in a room with a gun. Police arrived and confiscated several guns and pills from Cobain, who insisted he was not suicidal. He locked himself in the room to hide and get away from Courtney.
Don't blame him.
So there's the first little bit of information where this is starting to
take. Do we need to do a disclaimer at any point now?
No, because we're not actually into the conspiracy part. Okay. This is like from police reports.
So this is all fact then, yeah, right?
Yeah, this bit. I'll get ready with the old... This is all fact. So March 25th, 1994, Love arranged an intervention regarding Kurt's drug use. 10 people were there, including his best friend, Dylan Carlson. Cobain reacted with anger and locked himself in an upstairs bedroom. However, Cobain did agree to a detox program and he entered a residential facility in Los Angeles for a few days on March 30th, 1994. On April 7th, rumors of Nirvana splitting up as they pulled out of Lollapalooza Festival.
Oh, right, yeah.
And they were meant to earn millions from that. I think it was 10 million I read.
What, for one festival?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
I know headliners get a lot, but 10 million for one gig?
They were going to be the ultimate headliner.
And wow.
They had to pull out. So there was rumours going around that they had broken up because of that. And most of Kurt's friends and family did not know his whereabouts because obviously he was meant to be at a detox centre.
Yeah.
And then no one knew where he was. So on April 8th, 1994, Kurt's body was found at his home in the greenhouse of their Seattle home by an electrician who had arrived to install a security system on the property.
He was a bit late then, wasn't he?
Yeah. Hmm. And a suicide note was found addressed to Kurt's childhood imaginary friend, Bodder. The coroner's report estimated he had died on April 5th, 1994, at the age of 27. So his body was found on the 8th, but the coroner said he was dead on the April 5th, so 3 days before.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 upfront payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes. See details.
The DSW Black Friday sale is on. Take 30% off almost everything in stores and online right now. Yep, you heard that right. 30% off. Stock up on new shoes, bags, and extras for you and yours from all the gift-worthy brands you love. But hurry, Black Friday can't last forever. Get to your DSW store or DSW.com ASAP to save big. Exclusions apply. Details at DSW.com.
Now is the part where this gets juicy, but okay. I'm going to make a disclaimer. This is a conspiracy. If you type in Kurt Cobain conspiracy on any search engine, you will find the same information that I have found. There is multiple documentaries from people that were around at the time. Even people involved in the case have been on several documentaries that I watched. So I've got information from those documentaries. All of this stuff is available, but I will just say, to cover our backs, this is a conspiracy.
Right. So
none of this is true. By law, Kurt Cobain committed suicide, and that is the final ruling.
On his death certificate, the legal reason for his death is suicide.
Yes.
So anything from here on in is hearsay.
Hearsay, conspiracy, and a lot of coincidences.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to leave it up to the listeners. At the end of reading all of this rubbish, I'm going to leave it up to them at the end to make a decision. You can believe the conspiracy theory, or you can stick to the official police report, or you can be somewhere in between, or you can do what you like. You can think what you like. Now, again, hearsay, conspiracies. Several friends and family were shocked to hear that Kurt killed himself, because at the time, every single one of them said that there's no way he would have killed himself.
He wasn't in that headspace.
Was not in that headspace. Several police discrepancies in the police reports. The fingerprints were not taken until almost a month after Kurt's body was found. That is fact, that bit. You can look that up. I was about to swear then. The fingerprints on the gun, you think, would be covered in Kurt's fingerprints.
You'd thought so.
No, they were smeared and smudged there was hardly any fingerprints at all, including Kurt's, and he was the one that supposedly killed himself with that gun. And again, they did not test for the fingerprints until almost a month after his body was found.
He didn't buy that gun either, did he?
No, his friend did.
His friend. So surely his friend's fingerprints would have been... There would have been multiple sets of fingerprints on that gun.
Yeah, but they couldn't find hardly any.
Yeah.
They found parts of like what looked like Kurt's fingerprints. But the police done a terrible job with the crime scene, and the whole situation was handled poorly from the start.
Right, okay.
So police work was not good. Tom Grant, a private investigator, was hired by Courtney Love to find Cobain after he fled the rehab center. Even he says he believes that Cobain was murdered, and he was hired by Courtney. He's been on several documentaries and interviews stating Cobain's death is filled with lies, contradictions in logic, countless inconsistencies, and motivated by profit over truth. Courtney hired Tom Grant under Kurt's mother's name, Wendy, not hers.
Oh, okay.
So, again...
But he says it was definitely Courtney that hired him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was okay. There, but she did it under Kurt's mum's name, not her own name.
That's weird.
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Let's go into the more darker bit and get that bit out of the way. So he allegedly died of an overdose and was shot afterwards, post-mortem, to make it look like suicide. The heroin was three times the lethal dose in his system, with traces of Valium also found in his system. So could he have even pulled the trigger if he was three times the lethal dose? Also, just going off of that bit, doctors and people that deal with drug rehab and people that have found people unfortunately dead through heroin have said that the lethal dose, one lethal dose, sometimes it acts so quickly they don't even have time to pull the needle out of their arm. They find bodies and the needle is still on the arm and they are stone cold dead.
Yeah, literally. Like, right. Because you're injecting straight into a vein, it takes effect literally in seconds. That's what heroin users want. They want that hit, that instant, like, you know, jab.
Straight to the bloodstream.
Yeah, jab, squeeze, dunk, you know.
So it wouldn't make sense that Kurt's needle and his paraphernalia were neatly in a box next to him then.
No.
Okay. Coincidence.
Not if he'd overdosed.
The gun was laying across his chest with his left hand wrapped around the barrel.
He was left-handed, so
yeah.
You would imagine that his left hand would be on the trigger, not the barrel.
Yep. So, and again, coincidence, mate. I don't know what I'm talking about.
But he was ambidextrous.
But when it came to playing guitar and things, he was left-handed. There was only a few things he did right-handed, which was like writing.
Do we have any accounts of him ever actually firing a gun? Is there any video footage? Is there any witness testimonials to say that he fired a gun left-handed or right-handed? Or was he ambidextrous?
No, not that I could find.
No?
Not that I could find.
Most likely he would have been firing it left-handed then.
His gun was 28 inches... and Kurt's arm length was 32, so only gives you about 4 inches to play with there.
Yeah.
But also, not to mention the fact that if you've got three times the lethal dosage of heroin in your system, are you really going to have the mind and the whereabouts to be able to put all that paraphernalia neatly in a box, have time to then put the shotgun in your mouth and pull the trigger when you're high up your head on heroin?
Not likely.
So,
you're feeling all nice and warm and fuzzy from opium.
Yeah, or terrible, because heroin's a terrible drug pirate.
Sorry, no, but...
warm and fuzzy?
I'm not trying to, like, encourage people to take heroin, but, like, all I know is, like, from opium or opioids, if you've ever taken, like, codeine or anything like that, you know, any kind of... If you've had morphine prescribed to you by a doctor... You get warm and fuzzy, and you feel tired and drowsy, and yeah, you're not really in the mindset to think, oh, life sucks, I'm going to kill myself. Mm. No, you're just not in. That doesn't even enter your head.
No. So the like you said before, the gun was purchased by his friend Dylan Carlson, as Kurt was worried police would take them away, and he had been dealing with break-ins and intruders.
Oh, and because of like the gun and stuff from before, where Courtney had called the police on him, and he had guns in the room or whatever. Yeah, okay.
So he got his mate to buy it for him, but that was supposedly because of break-ins and intruders and trespassers.
Yeah, yeah.
So journalists Ian Halperin and Max Wallace contacted Dr. Osvaldo Galletta, who treated Cobain after the champagne and pills overdose in Rome.
Right.
That Courtney had said was his first suicide attempt. And Dr. Galletta contests it wasn't a suicide attempt, and it didn't look like one to him.
Okay.
So that's coming from the doctor. The marriage was on the rocks, so there was jealousy, fighting, etc. Between Kurt and Courtney. And they actually had a male nanny, looking after the baby. And his name was Michael Cally DeWitt. And he actually lived in the house with
Courtney,
as well as his girlfriend.
Right.
And he is allegedly the ex-boyfriend of Courtney Love.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. No, that's not weird at all, is it?
Yeah. And he claims Kurt had given his lawyer the instructions to prepare for divorce. Kurt also had a prenup. So Kurt was worth more dead than alive at that point to Courtney. To Courtney. Yeah. And Love had allegedly been wanting to find a vicious divorce lawyer to remove the prenup agreement.
But you can't do that because that's the whole point of a prenup, isn't it?
So if they would have gone through a divorce like Kurt wanted, she would have got nothing. So Nick Broomfield, a filmmaker, worked on a documentary called Kurt and Courtney. And there was a man called Eldon Elduce Hokey, a bit of a gangster, basically. He claims that Love offered him $50,000 to kill Cobain. He then claimed to know who did kill Cobain, but wouldn't mention the name on camera. Eldon Hokey, or Elduce, died a few days later when he was mysteriously struck by a train in the middle of the night.
Right. Okay.
Again, no, I'm just saying, coincidence.
that's the most random death I've ever heard of, I think.
Yeah, but it's just coincidence.
Yeah.
So Nicholas Hartshorn, the coroner in Cobain's case, was an admitted friend of Courtney Love's, which should have been a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
And his report was the one that is suicide and has stuck to
suicide. Right, yeah, of course. So, yeah, no, that's not corrupt at all.
Yeah. Supposedly, the bullets that were bought for Kurt from his friend were birdshot, so not as much damage as a buckshot.
Now,
a birdshot wouldn't have caused that much damage in a suicide attempt. It would have killed someone, but
with a barrel in your mouth, I think it's still going to do.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Potentially lethal
a buckshot, which was what was found at the scene.
Oh, right, yeah.
Was completely out the back of the head, gory details.
Blowing the back of his head off,
Now, allegedly, the friend, Carlson, didn't buy buckshot bullets. It was birdshot. So it was completely different bullet. So, yes, it would have still done some serious damage, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But allegedly, the bullets were different.
Fair enough,
a point worth making.
Okay.
So, the suicide note. The top part of the suicide note was addressed to Bodder, his imaginary friend, but it was also kind of like talking to the fans, if you know what I mean. It wasn't directed at anyone. And the suicide note was examined by two leading experts in handwriting, and they came to the conclusion it didn't match Kurt's handwriting. If anything, it was only the top bit that did match Kurt's handwriting, but they're still not even sure on that. They actually estimated there could be up to three different people's types of handwriting on this thing, with very little of it matching Kurt's. And Courtney Love read out the parts of the suicide note, but interestingly enough, she didn't write or read the part of the suicide note that was addressed to the fans. She read the bit that was about her being how amazing and what an amazing wife she was and all this stuff about her.
Right.
So that's interesting. coincidence.
Can you read the entire suicide note online?
Yeah. Okay. The writing is hard to read. All three different types of handwriting are hard to read. So there is someone, like, there's websites where people have actually typed it out and you can read it says.
Fair enough.
So Kim Gordon, the lead singer of Sonic Youth, who became friends with Kurt, she thinks that Kurt was murdered. Going by the theory saying that Kurt was never a violent person, he was never aggressive. So to have such a harsh, violent end to someone whose life was such calm and relaxing energy didn't make sense to her whatsoever. And again, going back to the Buddhist beliefs and the philosophy that he enjoyed, she thought it just didn't add up
at all. Yeah, no, it doesn't, no.
Now, he also couldn't change the will. He didn't get a chance to sign the will, which would have taken Courtney out of it before his death.
Okay.
So he was in the process of it. He never signed it. So thus Courtney getting the rights and the money and everything. Courtney's own father, Hank Harrison, he was the road manager for the Grateful Dead.
Oh, really?
He believes his daughter killed Kurt.
Oh, my God.
He said, and this is a quote from an interview that he did, "She's a psychopath. She has sociopathic personality like I do. I don't know who killed him. I know who benefited from his death. My daughter." So that's her own
That's
her
not
own
an
father.
Outright accusation, but, I mean, it's as close as you can get to one.
Yeah. And that's Courtney Love's father saying that.
Fair play.
Now, just to flip it a little bit, the bassist Chris believes it was a suicide attempt and people need to stop and just let Kurt rest in peace, which I kind of understand because it was those two from the start.
Yeah.
So he's probably fed up of hearing it. And
probably.
Do you know what I mean? So fair play to him. I kind of get where he's coming from, but he just thinks it was suicide. Dave Grohl doesn't speak of it. He doesn't speak to Courtney. He doesn't have anything to do with Courtney. And that's partly to do with the rights and the music and the money and things like that.
I'm not sure if Courtney had anything to do with it, but I know Dave Grohl and Kurt, towards the end of the band, didn't exactly speak between them either. They used to communicate through Chris, the bass player,
because
they didn't really get along. They had differences of agreement, and they were both so stubborn that they just didn't talk to each other, and it was Chris that used to mediate between the two of them.
And
that might have been born through Courtney. I don't know. I don't know how that started out, but I know that that was a thing.
Yeah. Obviously, I can't confirm it. I don't know.
I don't think Dave Grohl would speak ill of the dead.
No, he doesn't. That's the thing. He's a lovable person. Dave Grohl he's got a great attitude towards rock and roll and things. And in interviews, I've only seen him say nice things about Kurt, but refuses to talk about the situation and Courtney. Yeah. He wants to remember Kurt for the good times.
Yeah.
So even if they were at bad terms, I think it says a lot about him to only reflect on the good times.
Yeah, definitely.
When Kurt died, regardless, 100%, Dave was actually like really upset and really...
Oh, he would have been.
You know, there was a quote from him saying he woke up and he just still couldn't believe it that one of his best friends had died and things. So whether or not they did butt heads, there's still obviously a lot of love there from Dave Grohl.
You know, you're not in a band together for years without some kind of admiration and respect for each other, right? Even if you do, like you say, fall out from time to time.
Yeah. And the Seattle police have received at least one letter a week since Kurt's death to reopen the case.
Every week for...
Yeah.
What?
Since 1994.
It's nearly 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. And they did actually, surprisingly, I find this a bit weird. So they did actually reopen the case not too long ago, and they came to the same conclusion. It was suicide, nothing changed. But then mysteriously in 2022 and 2023, the FBI went into the evidence bit, and they found undisclosed pictures of the actual scene of Kurt's body and things, and said that they weren't going to release them to the public. And they'd been sat there for how many years going unnoticed and nobody looked at them as evidence or anything like that. But they just turned up. So that to me maybe suggests a little bit of a cover up there from the police part of side of things.
Definitely, yeah. More I don't really adds know, to the conspiracy, doesn't it?
I just find that odd. Now we're gonna end on a slight positive. So going forward into modern times, the daughter, Frances Bean Cobain, because I know some of you will probably think, what's going on there? Does Courtney still have anything like involved? So allegedly there was a restraining order against her mother in 2009 for domestic violence, and has stayed. So she doesn't speak to her mother. She actually, was it parental rights, went to Kurt's sister, Kim.
Okay, yeah, no, because, yeah, 2009, she would have been only, what, 16 years old? 1994, 2009, yeah. She would have been about 16 years old.
Yeah,
1992. 15 was born. 92, okay. Oh, maybe 80. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, well, I mean, we don't know the situation there, but she doesn't get on with her mother, basically. Fair enough. It was Kurt's sister and
I get the feeling a lot of people don't get on with her mother.
No. So Kurt's sister and her grandmother ended up, like, raising her and taking her in.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the good bit. We've come full circle now. So in 2010, when Frances Bean turned 18, she actually inherited the 37% of her late father's estate. She now controls the publicity rights to her father's name and image instead of her mother, Courtney Love, royalties included.
Good on her.
So now she owns all of that, and rightly so.
Decent, yeah.
Because she is the blood of Kurt Cobain.
Yes, definitely.
She is now married to Riley Hawk, who is Tony Hawk's son.
Oh, right, okay.
And the wedding was officiated by none other than her godfather, Michael Stipe of REM.
Fair play.
So we've come full circle to a happy ending. So congratulations, Frances Bean Cobain, for getting married to Tony Hawk's son. I wish you all the best for the future.
Yeah, definitely.
And that is Kurt Cobain and the conspiracy.
And you're going to ask me now, what do I think of the conspiracy?
What do you think?
I think there's a lot to take in there, isn't there?
Mm.
I'm with you. I don't believe that Kurt committed suicide.
I don't either.
He was in a really quite a good place in his life. He was at the pinnacle of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there was drugs involved, but he'd been taking drugs for years, in controlled circumstances. All right, maybe he'd taken had the odd overdose or whatnot. Courtney claims, who knows? Even like you said, was it the coroner report or said he didn't believe that it was
the
suicide?
Private investigator.
The private investigator, that was it, believed that Cobain wasn't suicidal, it was an accidental overdose or whatever. Yeah, the bullets not matching, the fingerprints not matching.
The fingerprints is odd. Because it's almost like someone had wiped the gun.
Yeah, well, obviously, yeah. The gun being in his wrong hand, I mean, yeah.
There was also a few police officers on the scene that said, I mean, this is again, it's allegedly. They said for someone to shoot themselves in the mouth in that spot, there would have been a lot more blood with a buckshot bullet. There would have been a lot more blood.
Right.
Suggesting, and again, this is just a conspiracy, suggesting
that
maybe
before they actually
his body
shot.
Was dragged and put there.
Mm. Yeah.
Allegedly. Yeah. So there's so much to it as well. I've left some things out because we were just getting on for time, but it really is a fascinating conspiracy, and it's been going on for years.
Yeah.
Like there's several documentaries, other podcasts have covered this, and you know, it's a real interesting one, but yeah, I don't know. What are you giving out of 10 for the scale? The life and death of Kurt Cobain.
I'm going to give it 9.7.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give it the full 9.9 because there is just a seed of doubt as to who actually did it.
Yeah.
You know?
There's another bit of this conspiracy, but I only saw like two reports on it, so I didn't want to cover it. I can give you the brief, quick one.
I can believe who orchestrated it.
Yes, yes. Okay, yeah, we'll stick with that.
But as for actually what happened, how it happened, there's still some doubts there about, you know, was it a gunshot that actually killed him? Was it an overdose? Well, you know, because in fairness, Kurt probably could take quite a lot of drugs before he would have overdosed. You know, and that whole, oh, he had so many, such amount of times of lethal overdose. Well, a lethal overdose to a scientist is not the same, necessarily the same to a rock star. You
know, still though, man.
Charlie Sheen reckons that you can take more crack cocaine than any man on earth just because he's just Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, but he's made a tiger blood. He's different.
But you know, 9.7, I think 9.7 is fair.
Yeah, that is fair. I still think three times the lethal dose is, it's going to do something. I don't think it's just, I don't think that's going to be a hit where you're just like, oh, I need more. That's done nothing. Do you know what I mean? We're talking three times heroin, the worst drug.
Friends who in the past claim that they took more than a lethal dose of the stuff and survived it. So, you know, what is the lethal dose in my opinion? I don't know. I've never been into heroin, so I don't actually know.
I do have it written down somewhere. 225 milligrams
is what he had.
Is a lethal dose. So I'm pretty sure he had three.
Yeah, I would say 225 milligrams probably is a lethal dose. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think he had three
and
times
he had
that.
600, nearly 700 milligrams.
Yeah, that's what I saw in the research.
Yeah, I'd say that'd kill you.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, I think that'll do some damage. I'm gonna give it. I'm going to give it a 9.4 because...
Oh, really? I thought you were going to go higher, to be honest.
I want to because, I mean, it's out of respect because he passed away in 94. So I want to give him a 9.4. Mm-hmm. But also, I definitely think there's some shady stuff going on. I don't think it was suicide. But I personally think it was a combination of everything that messed it up. Like right from the start, the police done a terrible job with the crime scene. So even if they, when they tried to reopen the case and stuff, they couldn't do it to its how it should have been done.
No, that's true.
Because they had no evidence. They had no, do you know what I mean? They just took someone's word for it and then went along with it. Yes, there's a lot of coincidences. But I also think that now in modern times, all of Kurt's friends and family, two-thirds of them, a lot of them, now have turned and said, no, we do think it is suicide. So there's that little bit of doubt for me now where I'm like, well, if his close friends and family think of that, I don't know. So, but there is a lot of coincidences there. And there's some that I read that it's so crazy, I didn't want to lose credibility, so I haven't mentioned them. That involves ex-boyfriends and girlfriends and things and whatever. But... yeah, I think 9.4 is fair.
Okay. Right. Well, I want to go an higher, average of 9.55.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But yeah, rest in peace to Kurt Cobain, because what a hero. R.I.P. What a legend.
Yeah, absolute legend.
And I tell you what, mate, after researching this, while I was researching it, I got a certain AI computer that belongs to Amazon. I'm not going to say her name because I don't want people to go crazy. I listened to the whole of the Nevermind album that blew up for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a couple times on repeat while I was doing this. And that is actually a really good album. Like I can see why they got famous.
It was iconic,
that
was it.
Yeah, and now I've actually got a more of an appreciation for Nirvana. Whereas before I was always kind of like, yeah, they're all right.
Well, you're a little bit young for Nirvana, I suppose, weren't you?
Yeah, you were prime age, weren't you? Yeah, you would have been like 13, 14 when they were at the peak. So I would have been 4 or 5 or something. So I didn't develop or know about Nirvana until I was in my like emo phase and I was just everything rock music. Yeah, that was when I started hearing them. And even then I was like, yeah, they're all right. But it's not until I listened to this last week, actually gave it attention, that I was like, no, I can see why he's in the top 100 songwriters all the time. Like he was actually really talented.
I honestly
really good
wish
album.
That I'd got the chance to actually see Nirvana. Mm. I was a little bit young when they were actually touring. But the closest I ever got, I think the first time I saw Foo Fighters was at the V Festival 2001. Mm. I mean, my mates were like, well, this is as close as we can get to Nirvana these days, so lap it up, you know?
That's true. Yeah, and I stand by it. I think Foo Fighters are the last of a dying breed. I cannot think of a single rock band that is like great status. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think they are the last of the great rock bands.
Yeah. Yeah,
they stop making music, I can't think of a single one that is doing it like they've done it. Like,
no.
Do you know what I mean? I think they belong up there with like the Metallicas and things like that.
End of an era, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah, yeah. So you got your Metallicas and your things. And I think Foo Fighters have reached that status. And I can't think of a single rock band apart from the Foo Fighters. They're the most modern kind of big rock band.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So, yeah, there we have it. That's the Kurt Cobain conspiracy.
So I hope you enjoyed that. And I'm not even going to do a call to action this week. We hope you've enjoyed it. We hope you agree. That's the only call to action is let us know if you agree, or do you think he actually committed suicide? Put it in the comments section, whether that be video or audio on Spotify, wherever. Let us know what your thoughts are. And until next week, I've been Pirate.
I'm Josh.
It's been Paranormality UK. Ta-ta.
Ta-ta.
Hey, guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. They ship Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT.
Every idea starts with a problem. Warby Parker's was simple. Glasses are too expensive. So they set out to change that. By designing glasses in-house and selling directly to customers, they're able to offer prescription eyewear that's expertly crafted and unexpectedly affordable. Warby Parker glasses are made from premium materials like impact-resistant polycarbonate and custom acetate. And they start at just $95, including prescription lenses. Get glasses made from the good stuff. Stop by a Warby Parker store near you.
Bombas presents unsolicited gifting advice. Number one, if they say not to get them anything, get them something. Two, underwear is a great gift, just not for your boss. And three, those absurdly soft Bombas socks and slippers you've been eyeing for yourself, they'll love those. And the fact that for every item you purchase, another is donated to someone who needs it, they'll love that even more.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.